The family of a local teenager says she never would have left home without calling.
Just praying for the best. I want my daughter home, man. And if she can't come home, I just want to know where she's at.
These posters around the towns of Livermore and Jay beg anyone with information to come forward. Posters that Richard puts up every spring, never losing hope.
Tell me what happened to my daughter. Just look me in the eyes so I can see her.
An arrest in a nearly four-decade-old cold case. Thanks to cutting-edge DNA technology, the arrest happening exactly 39 years to the day.
When Parabon Nanolabs used that sample to create 3D models of the suspected killer's face.
It's heartbreaking. We miss her, and we're going to find her. We're going to keep looking till we do.
It's like a never-ending nightmare. It doesn't end. It keeps returning and coming back.
And we're live. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, watching this live, and everyone watching it back as a recording.
Yes, absolutely. So tonight we're joined by Kelly Canning. She's the sister of Bobby Steele, who, after being missing for almost a year, was found deceased in a wall in an abandoned building. So welcome, Kelly. How are you tonight?
I'm good. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. If you wouldn't mind, just give us a little background of your brother, what it's like growing up with him, and then ultimately the story as to what happened to him.
So growing up with Bobby was, well, I was the older sister by 2 years. So when you're that close in age, you are either best friends or you fight all the time or both. And we grew up doing both. He was always the talented one in the family. He could pick up a skateboard and just ride it, a baseball, and just throw it. And I just would look at him enviously and did not have that skill. he was always very popular, and I was always very, like, reserved. Funny enough, on his last day that he was here with me, he told me that he always wanted to hang out with me and thought that I was the popular one. And I was like, are you crazy? Like, no, that was always you. But he had a friend groups everywhere he went. He had this personality that he just knew he could do everything and anything. And so that, I think, attracted people to his personality, and it just gave him the confidence to try all of those sports and all of those things. Now, he was a pain in my butt because I felt like I was always chasing him around, you know, making sure he wasn't like skateboarding into the middle of the street. And it's just things boys do.
How much older are you than him?
2 years.
2 years. Okay. So you're really close then.
Really close in age. And unfortunately, when we were young, my parents got divorced, as parents tend to do. And we moved kind of a distance away from my mom, and my dad worked a lot. So I was at home a lot with my brother and our sister. So I did not want to be the annoying parental sister, but at times I had to be. But then as we grew older, obviously we kind of grew past that stage, and he continued on that path of being able to do anything and everything. And he was described by one person as just a light. He could like light up a room, and he could tell a story in a way that just brought you into the story and just added a level of like humor and animation to any story that he told that you couldn't stop listening. And even if you knew he was making half of it up just because he had an audience, it was just hilarious to listen to. The amount of people that have described him since this has happened, it's just, I've not had one person say anything bad. And they talk about his caring heart. They talk about what he would do for others, his love for animals, his personality that just shined wherever he went. And that could be from like being on a sports team and being the best player to being like homeless in a homeless encampment. No matter where he went, that personality just showed through. Unfortunately, when he was 13, he got injured pretty severely, and he was burned in an accident at a friend's house, and he was burned over a large portion of his right arm and a large portion of his left leg. He was in Crozier Chester Burn Center for 6 weeks with very significant burns. Once he came out of Crozier Chester, not only did the burns affect his pitching arm for baseball because it was right-handed, and it affected his confidence because they were really gigantic burns. He went through the skin graft process, but as a skinny 13 or 14-year-old at that time, I don't want to be too graphic, but the skin graft process is you take a piece of skin that's not burned and put it onto your burned skin. And after three of those, pain was just so like severe and significant that he just didn't want to do it anymore. So his confidence was shook. He couldn't play baseball anymore. And in the hospital, he had been on morphine for 6 straight weeks.
And wow.
Yeah, morphine drip at that, because burns are so painful that
yeah.
you press the button and your body, everything goes away. You come home and you're on Percocets or whatever for a little bit of time, but your body, especially a body that's still developing and a mind that's still developing, that's where the addiction came into play. And that, unfortunately for him, was that time in the mid-1990s to late 1990s that people realized you could open up your grandmother's like cabinet in her bathroom and you could find painkillers. And that's when like it really hit the suburbs of these kids in these neighborhoods that ended up addicted to the worst stuff, to heroin and everything else, because when that supply ran out, that's where they all went. And fortunately for Bobby, it went there. He got a lot of money from my mom had to sue the homeowner's insurance at the house where he was, and he got hurt to help with medical bills. He got a portion of that and she gave it to him, because I don't think she knew what to do with him either. So at 16, he got about $400,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was in like 1997. So,
wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So you take a person that lost their confidence and is addicted to drugs, and it gets almost, and now it'd be more than $500,000. And it's just a recipe for a catastrophe. So he had the fancy cars and the jewelry and the drugs and the partying and all the friends, but not the same friends. He had the yeah. friends because he had money, and he was, you know, he was the life of the party for them. When that ran out, that's when even more tragedy happened, because then he's addicted to drugs and he has no work ethic. You know, and he's just a teenager still, like 19, 20 at that point. And he got in trouble for some dumb things, and he ended up in prison back and forth. My mom was really a support, but an enabler for him. And that's tough to say because she's my mom too. But that's just the facts. So he went in and out of jail. He had jobs.
Do you mind letting us know what was he in jail for?
So the thing that he went to jail for a significant amount of time for, which is so ridiculous, he broke into a house with a kid, this kid he knew, and there was no one home. But this guy must have had the first Ring camera or some alarm that like comes to you personally that ever existed, because this guy got an alert and he came home and they got scared and they ran and they left the house. They didn't take anything, but Bobby was really good at like, he could run from anybody. And he led the Pennsylvania, the Chester County police on like a 7-hour like chase on foot, because his friend took his car and left him there.
Oh my word.
Of course. And he was in the woods and trees. They found him like 7 hours later walking down the road, and they were like, we know this was you. And he was like, it wasn't me. I was just going for a hike. They were so mad that they couldn't arrest him. 3 years later, the other kid got arrested for something else and said, hey, I'll tell you who was in that house with me.
Oh no.
And 3 years later, and the worst thing is Bobby was working, like he had steady like 2.5 years of work. He liked what he was doing, and they came and they're like, knock knock, remember wow. when we interviewed you before? And my mom worked for the police station, so like they had easy access to my brother. So, like we were in Delaware, but right across the line of Pennsylvania, so like they knew where to find him. And he didn't even steal anything from that house. And that is what, over the course of 10 years, he ended up back in jail for, because he violated probation.
So it's nice to hear that they followed up on this and tracked it down and tracked him down. So I'm interested to see how the story goes, if they do the same when he goes missing. Go ahead.
To be determined. But he, like, I'm a firm believer in, if you do something wrong, you do need to be held accountable. Like, you do. Level of accountability, that varies. Like, I think it was kind of a harsh sentence, but the judge was just tired of it, because that fun side of Bobby, he could really get on somebody's nerves. Like he got on my nerves sometimes. Like if he was like being mouthy, like you could want to send him to jail for 5 years just for being mouthy. But he just didn't have that support system ever. And he didn't have like the, as a kid grows up and a teenager grows up, they need to learn like responsibility and expectations and things like that. And he just didn't have that. So when anything would go wrong, like my mom would help him get through it. And when she couldn't, or she didn't, he could do something stupid, then he'd end up back in jail. He was in jail for that same thing, but because he got arrested for a minor drug offense, like buying a drug, like so I don't even know what it was, but they arrested him. Pennsylvania came and picked him up. That was in 2000, I believe, 11 or 12. He ended up staying in jail for 2-3 years for that. And while he was there, my mom passed away. So then that
sorry to hear that.
Thank you. It was tough, but it was way worse for him, because she was not only like his comfort while he was there, you know, the person who visited him and all of that. When he came out of jail, where do you go? You live with your mom forever. Like, you don't, your friends are all gone with the wind because you don't have any money anymore, other than a few like true friends that ended up.
Well, he was in luck because he had an older sister, right?
No, I said absolutely not. I've got family. Uh-oh. I love you and everything. What can I do for you to help you set yourself up for life? But I am not going to, like, you've got to come up with a plan. So I'm always there, but like, he needed to come up with a plan, and he did. And it was the best thing he ever did for himself, because he said, you know what, this isn't for me. I've got 6 months left of probation or parole, whatever. I don't want to live in a halfway house. I want to be done when I'm done. I'm going to put myself back in. And he did. And he finished that sentence, and he came out and he got a job. He moved in with a family friend. He was working. He learned a skill that he never had learned before. He was doing contracting. He learned plumbing. He learned construction. He was thriving. Last week I looked back on some of his posts of that time period from Facebook, because I was just having a bad day. And like, the things that he posted, I had to like take a screenshot of him and put him out there to the world, because he was just so happy. And the things he said were just so funny that, like, I think he was living his best life in those 2.5 years. No drugs, no nothing, learning a skill and just really feeling relevant in the world. And I loved that for him. So obviously we reconnected, and I was just so happy for him at that point. Then it all shifted.
Now, the picture on the screen, is this similar to what he looked like when he disappeared?
When he disappeared, yes.
Yeah.
The one with him holding the puppy. That was when he was in his thriving period. And that, like, that was when he had his head shaved. Yeah, mm-hmm. That was when he was working. He was doing contracting. I think he was painting a building in that picture in Wilmington. And then it all shifted in 2017. He met a girl, and I don't know what really happened. I don't know what attracted him to her, other than I think that he had lost his mom, you know, and she seemed to him very nurturing. She had kids, and she just seemed to want to be everything in his world. Like, his world became hers, to the point where all of a sudden Facebook's not Bobby Steele, it's Leah and Bobby Steele and things like that. Like, she just took over everything. And he, I think, needed it, but then it got bad really quickly. And he started making decisions for her instead of decisions for himself. And then he went back to drugs. And then they just, in 2018, they just moved to Elkton. Okay, so to put into perspective for anybody, it's not from the little state of Delaware. It's very small. And Elkton is in Cecil County, Maryland, which is right across the border. So from where I live in North Wilmington, it takes me about 25 minutes to get there. But from like Newark, you take two steps, Newark, Delaware, and you're right into Elkton. So it's very close, but it's very far away when it's not where you're from. You don't just go hang out down there because you want to. You don't drive past it, like going to 95. So he just decided to go and live there with this person, and lost all communication with everyone. He fell off the radar back in 2018. And I had to go and try and report him missing in Elkton, because everyone was telling me they couldn't get in touch with him. Elkton police said, no, we know him. He's homeless. We have a great homeless community here. He's great. Cleanest, friendliest homeless guy we've ever met. And I'm like, okay.
Wow. That sounds reassuring.
I'm this like person that's like, you make your choices in life, and if that's where you want to be, I can't tell you, you have to come with me. Like, you are an adult. So I gave them a message to let have them get in touch with me, and I went home, and I cried all the way to my 25 minutes home, because I'm like, that's a terrible life choice that I wouldn't make, but I'm not going to go in the woods and drag him into my car. You know, I'm just not going to do
right.
That. So, you know, we communicated throughout time, like, and the bits and pieces, because I get really mad at him, life choices. But in 2020, our dad died. And so then I had to get in touch with him for things that had to do with that. And I, you know, he was fine. It was COVID, so right after COVID. So, you know, he was a naysayer at that point in time. What do you have a mask on for? I'm like, oh, you're stupid. Like, I don't live in the woods. Like, I have to wear a mask. This is November of 2020. Like, this is what we do. Funny enough, he got COVID 2 months later and thought he was going to die, but you know, the irony of things. But he was still there, you know, and he was working. He was here and there. He was going back to school. But him and Leah would take separations from each other. And whenever she was gone, his life started to thrive. And then when she came back, his life kind of went back down to where it was. And this is not my opinion. This is what's been described to me from the police officers in Elkton, people that knew them, people that saw him at the college he was going to. But I didn't have anything to do with that, like that girl or him with her. And then it all shifted in 2023. He sent me a message on March 20th, 2023, saying that he was scared and he would like for me to video call him at least once every 2 days because something was happening in Cecil County, which I had referenced before when he would disappear. I'm like, I don't believe this. It seems so weird to me. But he said that people are being targeted. People like him are being targeted. Without families that will look for them are being targeted, and he needed somebody to video call him just to prove to people that he had someone that would look for him if he ever went missing. And
that's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's like, and Kelly, like, I know I've been like not the greatest throughout life. He's like, but I promise you, like, I'm getting my life together. I've got all these things working for me. I don't want anything from you. I love you. I just need someone to call me to prove that someone will look for me. And I was like, dude, I'm sitting in the airport getting ready to board a flight to Ireland. Like, I'll be back in 8 days, but I could have Colin. That's my son's nephew. Like, I could have him do it or one of my aunts. He's like, nah, sis, I'm good. I got on the plane because what are you going to do? I got on the plane. But when I got back, that's when I said, what do you need from me? And we started the plan of when I would pick him up, bring him here and help him get his life together. And I did on Easter Sunday, April 9th, 2023. Yes. But between when I got back in that day, Leah, his phone got smashed in a fight with her. He was, I don't know, like it was a bad 8 or 9 days for him. But when he got here, it was like we hadn't seen each other in so long, but it was as if we had seen each other the day before. We talked the first night, he took a shower, met my husband, ate dinner, and went to bed. And he slept for like 11 or 12 hours because he'd been sleeping on the streets and he came back to sleeping in a bed. We washed all his clothes. Not gonna lie, I searched his bags. I searched everything he had to make sure like he wasn't bringing something into my house.
Right.
Not acceptable. And he wasn't. He had nothing like that. He had been off of the hard drugs, like off of heroin for 5 years and on Suboxone. So he was like really, really focused on that goal of his of never going back to that life from before. So I was proud of him for that. And then the next morning got up. He did a lot of work. He had a lot of plans. Like he was working on his housing voucher, which I witnessed happened the next day. Like he got everything taken care of and signed. But he was just the Bobby that I the best version of himself. That night we stayed up until 4:30 in the morning talking, just talking, and got up the next day, which would be April 11th, the day he disappeared. Do you guys have any questions yet before I go into that?
So when did he move in with you? Did he only stay one night? Is that what it was?
It's two nights. It was April 9th to April 11th.
All right. And then, so you got up in the morning, if you want to go ahead and continue from there.
I got up in the morning on April 11th, and I had made plans for us to go to where we grew up, or early years, which is Smyrna, Delaware. It's about 45 minutes from here. I made plans to have two of my aunts and one of my cousins that he hadn't seen in forever meet us there. Because I wanted to know, like, hey, you have a big support network here. Like, it's not just me. Like, these are people that love you and have been worried about you.
That's not one of the pictures you sent me, is it?
Yeah, the one where, I don't know that one. Yeah, that was the last picture taken. Other than when he left, yeah. Because I had to go over to the CVS next door and I was like, oh, it's Red Nose Month or whatever that is that they do at one of those drugstores, CVS or Walgreens. They do it to support some cancer, I believe. So I was like, let me just get five of these and put those on and take that picture because I knew that Bobby would hate it. And
everyone else has a smile and he has a not so happy, yeah, I guess I'm here for this picture.
Exactly. Think back to he's like the cleanest, like, homeless person ever. Like he always cared about his looks. He didn't want to have a red nose picture floating around out there, and he knew I was going to put that on Facebook. But so we went and met my family down there, and it was a great lunch, and I saw him smiling and just them getting to know him, and it was just a great feeling. Left, we drove home, and we had a great time driving home, and we came into the house. Okay, let me go back. I'm sorry. I skipped a big portion of it. I skipped what we did in Elkton before we went to the lunch. So before we went to the lunch, we went down to Elkton, where he had been homeless. And he said, I've got to go to the Cecil County Health Department. I've got to go to this place, my doctor's office, because they're messing with me, Kelly. They're telling me I'm going to get this housing voucher. It's like a permanent voucher, and it's through a program in Cecil County provided by the HUD department. And it's really based to help the homeless people that are in Cecil County find permanent housing. I didn't think that this was ever going to get accomplished. And we went, we met his person at the homeless shelter that had been assisting him. We went to the doctor's office, and I've never seen anything like it, honestly. And if I hadn't been witness to it, I wouldn't believe that this is how I think it happened. They told him it's not going to happen. You need to make an appointment. You missed your appointment. He said, I need this to happen. This went back and forth, back and forth. It's going to be 2 months, 3 months. The doctor doesn't work there anymore. And I'm like, this is not, Bobby, we got to go. Like, this is not going to come together. This isn't how things are done in life. If they tell you you need to make an appointment, you have to make an appointment and follow what they're telling you with the doctor. No, nope. He wouldn't leave. I kid you not. Pizza got delivered for lunch for these people that work there. Within 5 minutes, here comes the doctor signing off on this diagnosis for him to get a permanent housing voucher. He made an email himself. The homeless advocate guy that was with him print out 2 copies, and we left. I was like,
good for him.
Okay. Then we went to the County Health Department, and the person he'd been working with there, manager or whatever she was, she wasn't there either, and she wasn't coming in that day. He did the same thing there, don't you know? A few phone calls later, here comes Amanda walking through the door. He gives her everything. She signs off on it. She tells him, you got it. You're done. This is a permanent housing voucher. You've given a certain amount of money each month to find your own home for the first time in your life.
Nice.
So it was a good day, is my whole point. It was
yeah.
a great day.
And he was determined to make sure that things are going in the right direction for him.
And he had a plan for the future.
He had all of it. Reconnected with me. He was going to see his nephew. Bobby loved his nephew. Probably my mom and my sister, and then his nephew. But like, that was the light of his life. And he hadn't seen him in a long time, because that's my role. You know, you gotta get your life together before you can see my kid. Even though my kid's now 29, I'm his mom. I make the rules. He was just had everything going for him. So after that lunch, and then we drive home, listening to music like from back in the day, having a great time. We walk in the house. He goes to like go dig through his book bag. I go out back. It was a long day for me, I'm not gonna lie. I had a glass of wine. I was trying to order him a Wi-Fi card so that he could have his phone plan going, because he didn't have a phone plan, trying to figure out like his next steps. And then my husband comes out and says, Bobby just left. And I was like, what do you mean he just left? He's like, just left. The Ring camera said, like, he's gone. And I said, wow. He's like, do you want to like go see what's going on with him? I was like, no, like he'll be right back. He's probably just going for a walk. It was, he walked, he called me 2 hours later on Facebook audio, like that's how he always called me for some reason. And was kind of like laughing, like, how long did it take you to know I was gone? And I was like, a second, stupid, I have a Ring camera. And it's like, I knew when you walked out the tour. And he's like, well, I said, where are you? What are you doing? And he's like, I told you I was going to go meet my friend on Market Street in Wilmington. And I was like, no, because you didn't even tell me you were leaving. And he said it again. No, I told you. And he said the person's name. I'm not going to say it on here. I told you I was going to go and meet so-and-so on Market Street.
And yeah, this is interesting that he's giving you details of things that you know he didn't tell you.
Exactly. And he said it twice, like adamantly, this is what's happening, what I told you. And I'm like, no. And you know, when you're in the moment and you're mad, like I was cooking tacos, like I was mad because he was gone for 2 hours after like everything I had done the last few days. Like, and I was like, you're disrespectful. Why don't you just tell me? And he's like, I'm not disrespectful. You're disrespectful. And I'm like, oh, here we go. And I'm like, no, you are. And then I was like, I know how to make him like feel what I'm saying. I was like, and you disrespected my husband. And he was like, I did not. And then he was like, you are disrespectful. And I hung up on him. It was like a 9-year-old conversation. Like, because yeah. I just thought like that he did what he was doing. He was going to come back. And then I could just yell at him when he got here. Mm-hmm. In a million, trillion, zillion years, I never, ever thought that would be the last conversation that I would ever have with my brother. But that's what happened. That is what I live with. Like, that I hung up on him because my tacos were cooking. Like, I'm
So do you think it was intentional that he had brought that up, that who he was talking to or who he was going to see? And had he ever mentioned this person before?
He had. He had worked with this person doing stuff like, you know, off the books, like contracting work. But at this point, I'm not sure if he mentioned this person because he wanted me to know it was with this person, or if he mentioned this person because something else was happening and he was trying to like
cover up for that. Yeah.
So Patricia Vaughn asked, did he act strange before he left? Like, did he give any indication that anything was wrong? Or like you said, it was a great day, right?
It was a great day. It was a long day, you know, and when you're fighting for something that like you've been trying to accomplish for so long, I think that you can tend to get overly like anxious. And he seemed like, by the time we finished lunch, like he seemed a little bit on edge, but he also had been getting a lot of texts and calls. And I don't know what those were all about. I just attributed his anxiousness to the fact that we just had lunch with two of my aunts and my cousin, and that was and all the stuff before. And he was probably like, just it, like, it's overstimulated with people because he wasn't used to that. But now I just don't know.
So you have your last phone call with him. Let's see. Do we have any other questions before we go? Okay. So yeah, Sandra, that's exactly what I think Kelly thinks as well. He might have been telling you where he was.
Yeah. So to that, one thing he did say in the call, and I didn't pay attention to it because it didn't seem relevant in that moment. He said, that's why I'm calling you on video call. And I had the phone to my ear because I was cooking. And I didn't even touch on that part of the conversation or that statement until later when he came back, or he didn't come back, because then it became so relevant. Like, it wasn't relevant in the moment we're arguing about who was disrespectful, but to say, that's why I called you on video calls, if he's trying to show me where he was. And I just, so after that.
So that's weird. Like, you're obviously not on a video chat, and he says, thanks for calling me on video chat or whatever.
Yeah.
He said that.
Yeah, that seems very, very intentional, like, so that the person he's with knows what's being said, as well as maybe trying to maybe give you some information. But
yeah,
now I'm just gonna ask, was anything missing from your home after he left? Like, he didn't take anything with him or anything like that? That
no.
Maybe there was a good question here from Jess. Hi, Jess, by the way. Was the voucher in his name? Could someone have taken it and tried to use it?
So that's a really, really good question. And it took me a lot of time to get the answer to that. The voucher would have been in his name, and he would have had to attend like counseling sessions once a month to be able to continue to qualify for the voucher. Okay. However, that line of questioning is really great, Jess, because there's a lot of other things that people that are on state assistance and things get, like they get their food stamp cards and they get all that stuff and they get it sent to these addresses, their homeless shelters. And those can keep going. If you don't let them know like someone is deceased, up, like, I don't know how often, I think it's like once a year you have to like re-up it or whatever, like re-qualify. But other than that, if somebody wanted something to happen to you and like you could use that card. Somebody, because those funds would continue to be loaded every single month.
So that voucher, someone else could use that voucher without him being present.
In theory, I would say probably, if the wrong people were the ones receiving the mail and dealing with like the processes, and we're talking about the same people that he met and talked with that day on Tuesday. So
Sarah Dietrich said, Kelly and I are in this together. My brother went missing from, was it Rom Elkton?
That's Elkton. Yeah.
Oh, from Elkton.
Oh, from, sorry.
And yeah.
Still missing. Or sorry to hear that, Sarah.
Her brother went missing about 4 years before mine, and it's a tragic case as well. It's just one of many down there that people within that like demographic that have been addicted or homeless or had mental issues that just disappear. And when you're talking about an area where the police say, oh, we have the best homeless system ever, it leads to a little bit of suspicion. And if you look in the general area of Maryland, like a 40-mile radius, the amount of like recovery homes and things like that, it'll blow your mind. So I think there's a big problem in that area that has to do with just people, when people that have the ability to take advantage of people at their weakest is happening down there.
Right.
I don't know if it had anything to do with Bobby, but it's tragic.
Trace said, did you touch on the messages about him wanting to you to check in on him? Sorry if I missed that. Yeah, we did talk about that, that he asked you to reach out to him like every couple of days and you were heading out of the country.
So someone would be looking for him if he did go missing. So
scary.
So that was the last time that anyone that we know of talked to him, right? Was that message, that call with you?
That was the last time. Yeah.
Until he was eventually found.
Yeah. So I, that happened and I messaged him at 9:06 PM that evening on the 11th, just saying, hey, just because I'm annoyed with you or whatever, doesn't mean I don't love you. Like I got to leave for, cause I was training for a new job. Like I have to leave for Georgetown in the morning. So please let me know what time you're coming home. We'll figure the rest of this out tomorrow. And I told him like Mike was available for whatever he needed because I wanted him to come home. I thought he was coming home and that was it. And if we take a pause there and we fast forward all the way until end of January, early February this year before middle of February, I was able to give the detectives enough like details and messages and things that I had tracked out on my own that they were able to get, which is almost unattainable, an actual warrant to serve to Meta to get all of his Facebook and Instagram data. And they received 4,000 pages of data like 2 days before maybe 5 days before the body was actually found. So, but the detective working the case did have time to review it. And he said that 9:06 PM was the last message that showed as like going through on anything.
And was that your message?
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah. And was that what led them to where he was?
No. So that's, I'm glad we still have 27 minutes. No. So.
We have as much time as you need for this.
That was, I found that out in February 2024. So I went on my work trip. I did my thing. And I constantly was calling, texting, trying to call anybody that I knew of his, nothing. But I also didn't panic because of the lifestyle he had lived. You know, I'm like, oh, well, maybe he just met up with somebody in New Wilmington. He's going to go do his thing and he'll call me back. But I had this underlying feeling that because he's not answering my messages, like after reconnecting with me and being in my house, is there something?
Yeah, especially after everything that you guys had that last day, like, right? Like that was such like a really good, like strong, powerful day for you guys together. Right.
Right. So, but I didn't panic. So, but I did start contacting people. And after about a week, so it's like April 18th, 19th, I think. The guy from the homeless shelter, the advocate person, reached out to me and said, no, I reached out to him midweek and I said, have you heard from Bobby? And he said, no. And then so by about a week, he reached out to me again and said, I still haven't heard from Bobby and I haven't seen Bobby. And I'll always see him, you know, walking down the street or he'll come in and, you know, he'll take a shower or whatever. He's like, I'm starting to get concerned. If it goes a little bit longer, I think that we need to file a missing persons report. So time went by. May 2nd is when I said, okay, enough. So May 2nd, my husband and I went to the Delaware State Police Troop, not far from our house. We had the message that he sent me on March 20th saying that he was fearful and you know, people were disappearing. We had the Ring camera footage of him walking out the door, all of it. And the Delaware State Police officer, though he was very kind, he said, unfortunately, because of where he disappeared, which was from your residence, you have to call Newcastle County Police Department. And he said, I'm going to warn you, you really need to focus on the fact that he lives with you right now. Because if not, they're just going to pawn it off to Elkton saying he had been there and he was just staying with you as a guest. And they're going to make Elkton take the case. That's exactly what I did. I came home and I called them.
Good on them, by the way, for mentioning that to you to address it that way.
Yes.
That's kudos to them for that.
But it's sad that they have to.
No, yes. Yeah, no, it is disgusting. But at least he knows how the system works and he's trying to help you with it.
100%. And that's what we said on that day. We're like, thank you so much for that. And then I went home and I tried to do exactly that. It didn't work. I talked to an officer on the phone. He talked to a supervisor. He called me back. In the meantime, I had sent him like an email with Bobby's email from March 20th. I told him, things surrounding it, the fact that he was diagnosed with a mental illness. He said, well, do you know what it is? And I said, no, like HIPAA, I can't get a doctor to tell me. And Bobby didn't just come home and like write down his diagnosis, but he did get this voucher that was created for people that are suffering like depression and homelessness and drug addiction, all that stuff is a fact. But I can't give you a specific diagnosis. And due to the fact that he was had been an addict, he had been homeless, he had been in jail, he did not fit the criteria. This is exactly what was said to me. He did not fit the criteria of a missing person in Newcastle County, Delaware, for the Newcastle County Police Department. And I was devastated. Like, what do you do when the police don't help? Well, you know that your brother isn't gone. So I think I cried a lot.
How do they have any right to say what classifies as a missing person? Unless you can talk to that person, they have no right telling you that they don't qualify.
That's what they always say. Oh, and as an adult, if you want to disappear, you're legally allowed to do that.
But guess what? There is a law in Delaware, which I did not know then. I know so much more now, and, you know, hindsight and all that. But
there's a law
in Delaware that says that if a person is missing and there are like qualified witnesses to that person missing and or video footage of when that person and where that person disappeared from, and especially if that person was at risk, or there could be a reason that they are not missing because of their own will, which would be his message, they are required to not only take the case, they're required to then send it to the rest of the state and other local law enforcement communities, and they're required to put it at the top of the priority list because it's a recent missing person. None of that happened.
Wow.
Is there any evidence that his card
that
was
should be
used
a law or... everywhere if it's not
it isn't
that should that oh my word man
yep so
I'll was his this part real was quick. His card ever used or anything like his
nothing
or anything like that
that didn't come out for months because I had to go to Elkton the next day because and they filed the missing persons report. They said if a person's actually missing, before he wasn't, remember, they knew where he was. This time they said, we have to file this. So they filed it. They put him into NCIC. They took all of the information. And within a week and a half, I was contacted by a detective. And she worked the case. She could not work the case criminally because the Attorney General of Maryland said there is absolutely no proof he ever came back to Maryland. But she worked the case the best she could. She got subpoenas through his Gmail and his bank accounts and all these things, but it took months because it wasn't a criminal investigation. So the difference between a subpoena and a warrant, a subpoena is like asking nicely, whereas a warrant is signed by a judge and you have to comply. So she sent subpoenas to places like Google and Facebook and everything, and she got some information, enough to know certain details, but it took a really long time. And in the meantime, my whole family and I were lobbying everybody in the state of Delaware, from the governor, the attorney general, to the police departments. Every favor we ever had, we called in to have them please take this case over. And every time they said, well, Elkton's investigating it. We went to Elkton. So we lost 10 months and he was found 5.2 miles from my house dead in Delaware, in Newcastle County, Delaware. So he never left the state.
All right, so let's talk about who found him and where was he found?
So he was found in a building that is 601 Delaware Avenue. That's the picture with the brick building. He was found by a crew. Yeah, that one. He was found in the wall, which I guess those pictures up later of like the wall. But he was found between the fifth and the fourth floor in a very small confined space. And he was just a skeleton at that point. He was found by a demolition crew that was tearing down, because the building is being demolished by a very well-known and connected development group in Delaware. This is right in the heart of the business district of Wilmington. You've got hospital here, you've got all the major banks all surrounding it. This is not like in a section of Wilmington that's not high traffic all day long. There's probably 18, 20 cameras that I counted just from one trip around the block within that vicinity. There's no footage anymore because they keep them for 60 days. So Newcastle County dropped the ball by not investigating because all of that is gone. But he was found in that building by the demo crew. The demo crew guy called the guy who contracted him. That guy called the owner of the building. All were on site before the police were called. And then the police were called and then the medical examiner. And it was deemed not suspicious. And the entire time that they were all there taking pictures, they were still continuing demolition of the building. They never.
Yeah. So, and I know we talked about this earlier. So we're going to show you a quick picture. So viewer discretion is advised. It's your brother's skull, right? In the mm-hmm. wall.
Yeah. This is when the contractors took this picture.
Yeah.
And you said the medical examiners were there at the time, right?
That's the medical examiner in the blue that you can see us. But we know that's the medical examiner because we heard his voice and we know his voice because we met with him. But that was sent to us by a contractor who talked to us for a good 35, 40 minutes after we called him to ask him what he knew about the body. That's also, I know it's a medical examiner because that's when the wall was already taken down. So that wall was way higher up when the body was found. So they had the medical examiner had a lot of that wall pulled out.
And he's allowing this guy to just take a picture and send it to whoever he wants.
As a matter of fact, he said on the, because I don't think the guy knew it was a picture that you could have sound on it. So you hear it, if you press that little circle and you hear him say, "Don't post this on the internet, playa."
Wow. So there's a comment here from Joe Charpentier. He's actually an investigative journalist up here in Maine. Says, please consider finding an attorney. If they say you have a case against the department, follow through with it. Nothing changes if no one makes an example of poor law enforcement. And I think there's quite a few examples of poor law enforcement here. And I don't know if that's something you guys are already looking at, but and not to take away from what we're talking about, but I think that that's important. Not these sort of mistakes will keep going on if it's not addressed. And I know that you're already have been quite a bulldog to get stuff done for your brother, but
thank you,
Stacy Baker. She says, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I hope they search every inch of that building for others." Like, I mean, is that something you think could that have been like a dumping ground for somebody or? I mean, how do you think he got there?
The building for him, someone has reached out to me that knows one of the people that works for the company that owns the building, and they said that they knew that there was a break-in, and that they knew someone was in that wall, and I don't think there was a break-in because it was the circumstances leading up to it that we found out after the body was discovered February 16th. We found out a lot after February 16th on our own. Before the DNA confirmation even came, we found out what building it was. My husband went there. He talked to some random construction guy. He gave the guy his name that hired him. That's the guy who sent the picture. We called him. Well, my husband called him. My cousin called him. And then I called him and said, there's going to be a newspaper story about this. So you might want to tell me what your version of the story is. I just made that up at that point in time. He called me in 2 minutes.
Whatever it takes.
In 3 minutes.
Good for you.
Good for you. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And we got it. I mean, it's not admissible anywhere, but it's all recorded. So I could go back and listen to it again, you know, and my husband asked some really great questions. And this man adamantly states that when he found the body, cause he smelled something and they went around, they poked holes in the wall and they saw a skull. And then the body was like kind of hanging between the fifth and the fourth floor in this very small enclosed space. He says he called the guy who hired him. The guy who hired him came and now I know his name. So then he calls me after I called him twice. And he's going to tell me everything too. He's singing like a canary. He tells me a completely different version of the story. The first person said Bobby was in the pipe chase wearing his pants and his shoes. This guy tells me, who got there 20 minutes later, that when he got there, the pants were yanked off of the body from inside the pipe chase. The shoes were off and the pants were on the bathroom floor below with the pockets turned inside out. That's how the medical examiner found.
What is a pipe chase? That's the space in the wall for pipes to run, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so.
No, thanks. I was just going to do that.
This is just my husband's like version of it, but the specs are right. So that runs along the side inside the building. It's in the bathroom, and so it's the waste pipe can run from the sixth floor to the basement. And then there's other pipes that run across, and it's the exact same from the sixth floor all the way to the first floor. The bathrooms are on the same spot. So to get into it, he would have had to go up into the ceiling and go into like a very small, maybe 6-inch space that's open and slide in with his arms down at his side. And he was down on between the fifth and the fourth floor.
That doesn't seem like something anyone would do.
No,
and not of their own free will.
No. And his pants were ripped off his body when he was a skeleton, because per the medical examiner, there was a piece of the denim still on his skeleton, but the pants and the shirt he was wearing had the same amount of decomp on them.
So then someone had found him at one point.
Well, someone had found him February 16th, because the first guy that found him said he was wearing his pants and the second guy that came.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So it sounds like one of the crew took his clothes off to identify or rob. Like, I'm a pessimist, so I don't think it's identify, but I don't know why there would be two different reports, two different stories about how the condition of the body was found
within the same like a 20-minute period.
Right, right.
My theory, and this is where I have theories, I don't have facts. I think that there was a reason the body was in that spot, and somebody wanted to make sure before the police got there that his wallet wasn't in his jeans. So they yanked the pants from hanging up in the, you know, between, because it was high up, yanked the pants off, made sure there was no wallet to ID him, threw the pants in the corner, and then.
So yeah, person A telling the truth.
Yes.
Person B, maybe not.
Or person B, because he called the building people, maybe then they were on site too before he went down and found the
pants. Or, okay, right, right. He was. Yeah. So we have a comment here from Jen Dorman saying I have a few quick questions. Did your brother have contact with a person he went to meet back when he said he was worried about people going missing? Also, the subject your brother told you he was meeting, was he in construction? Have you checked to see if the guy did a job at that building? Did the medical examiner release any information about broken bones, injuries, or injuries to the bones?
Okay. So no, he not mentioned that person when he said he was.
I'll leave that up so you can.
That was Cecil County. He did not have any broken bones. His bones were actually completely intact. There was no blunt force trauma, which if you're trying to get out of that because you fell into it, you're gonna really probably try.
You would assume there would be something at least. Right. Like you wouldn't get into that position and stay there in perfect condition without getting out. Now that looked like it was just sheetrock. Let me go back to those viewer discretion if anyone's tuning in.
Plaster, he said, my husband says.
Yeah, that, right, right. So on one side, it does look like that might, no, that's just tile. That I don't, it looks like a person, if they wanted to, could probably get through part of that wall. But there might be injury to their body, but he did not go in there and stay there of his own volition, as far as I'm concerned.
No, so, they said he wouldn't be able to punch his way out if he thought he could punch his way out. But the fact of the matter is, like, if you see that pipe, the white pipe, there's no damage to that white pipe. Like, there's no.
It's sun. Immaculate.
Exactly. So if you're stuck in there, you're not gonna. That's nothing's gonna be immaculate. You're gonna try and get out with everything you have.
And if nothing else, and if you're stuck in there for hours, you would at least think, okay, maybe do damage to the septic pipe, and eventually someone would have to come looking because there would be a jam or something. And it's just first thought for me, at least.
Have you seen the medical examiner's report?
No, I have not.
Because I'm wondering, like, blood would pool in his feet, right? If he's stuck in that position, that's where he died.
There was no blood left. I mean, he was a skeleton.
Oh, yeah.
There was nothing. He was like complete skeleton. The medical examiner said there was no sign of blunt force trauma. I said, well, could he have gotten electrocuted? You know, I don't know what he would be doing in there, but could that have happened?
Right.
No, because they examined the skull. And if someone's electrocuted, apparently there's a line that goes down the skull that lets them know that someone was electrocuted.
Oh, okay.
So, news to me. But he said there was absolutely no trauma. Here's the kicker. Everybody that was on site knew the brand of the shirt and the brand of the pants that he was wearing. The shirt was pretty much like what my husband's wearing in that picture right there. It was blue, but there was no tag on the outside, no sign, no nothing.
So they had to have looked inside of it.
But the shirt wasn't taken off the body till it went to the medical examiner's office. They all told me the brand of the shirt.
So how are they getting down
there? How long was this crew working on that building?
Well, off and on for quite some time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you believe this is where he actually passed, or do you think that he passed somewhere else and his body was placed there knowing that the building was going to be demolished?
That I don't want to speculate too much on. I think that it was placed there. I 100% think that, but I don't know if he went there for a reason to meet somebody and then something happened there and was placed into that wall. That's like a strong theory of mine. But I just know that he didn't place himself in that wall like that with his arms at his sides, missing his cell phone. His laptop was gone. His backpack was gone. All of his belongings were gone. His watch was taken off of his wrist and gone. And his necklaces were gone.
Wow.
So what we have on the screen now, this is a picture of your husband. And this is roughly the same, like the location of where Bobby was.
Yep.
This shows how he was found.
And how tight the space is.
Right. And it looks like, yeah, you're even... Now, did he actually built a wall there, right? And it's kind of hard to see, but...
built something.
Yeah, so he is squeezed in there quite tight. And yes, hands at his sides, which is how he was found. I guess that is one thing that does kind of... Like, why... I don't get it. The arms at the sides. If someone was trying to get out of there, they wouldn't have their arms at their sides at all.
Or if they were going down there for a purpose, even if they were going to hide, like one of the theories is trespassing, and he wouldn't go like that. He'd hang onto the pole.
Right. And you the hands would have been above your head.
Right. And you'd said that before we went live too, is that there was supposedly a break in earlier on that building around the same time that your brother had gone missing. Right. But like, a window is broken. Yeah, I'll let you explain it.
So there was never a report made of a break-in. So Bobby disappeared April 11th, and that's April 11th, 2023. No one hears anything about a break-in. So you fast forward to when the body was found February 16th. That's when the story of the break-in comes into play, because that's when the owners of the building then told the police that there was a break-in April 13th or 14th, and they provided the six pictures, including that broken window, to the police. But they didn't call the police. There was no alarm that went off on the 11th. There's no reports of police coming. The police didn't go through the building. The people that own the building say they went through the building floor by floor and searched and saw damage in a bathroom and a window broken. That was 2 to 3 days after Bobby disappeared and his last message went to his phone or Facebook at 9:06. Days went by. So they're saying all of that, but it's really truly just their word, because they never had the police come and check the building when that break-in supposedly happened.
Brian Stay at Home has a good question here. Was a Gmail account linked to his phone? Because you can get the Gmail account and into Maps and see his locations. Was that something that you guys went through?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. The detective from Elkton did do that, and his ex-girlfriend broke that phone April 5th because I was coming to pick him up. He was talking to me through it. And she admits she did that. She told me and the detectives. So that phone last pinged in Philadelphia on April 4th from his Gmail, and nobody knows why he was there or if he was there last time. Yeah. And so then he had a different phone that he didn't have his Gmail hooked up to. So that was investigated. But once she broke that phone April 5th, they couldn't use
so that. Jen asked, do you know if the subject he told you he was meeting worked on that site around the time he went missing?
That I don't know. I don't know all of the crews. I don't believe so. Really don't.
Initially, the police had ruled this as like no foul play, right? Yeah. But it does appear as though now someone is looking into it as potentially a homicide.
So the police, when a skeleton is found, this is a crazy law in Delaware. When a skeleton is found, it automatically becomes the crime scene becomes the medical examiner's office's crime scene, because they don't know if that skeleton's been there for 7 years or 70 years or 2 months.
Right. Okay.
The medical examiner was investigating it. So then the police are just like, oh, no suspicious, nothing. Like, because they're done with it. Wilmington PD was done. But then with all of the evidence and things, like when we met with the medical examiner, we talked about the best they could do was deem the death undetermined because he was just a skeleton with nothing, no blunt force trauma. So at that point, it goes back over to Wilmington PD, who then just didn't do anything and continue to give statements to reporters that contact them about, nope, nothing suspicious. Like, it's just the death's being investigated. So we've gone back and forth, and now it's
nothing suspicious.
Now they got detectives and sergeants and AGs looking at it. So, I mean, I think they make themselves sound really silly when they say it's not suspicious anymore. We even asked them, hey, is that just the verbiage you use to any question from any reporter? Like, if it is, then we understand. But if it's not, then like, you are looking into it because we're meeting with you. Like, we're forcing these meetings. We're having these conversations. Like, so you are investigating it. So now it's deemed a death investigation. It's a lot of change that has to happen.
Unreal.
Yeah, no. And just the idea and sure, maybe there's a lot going on in was it Wilmington? I don't know what the crime rate or anything is like in Wilmington, but the fact that they're so willing to just pass something off and say, well, this is their problem now. Maybe they're not, I don't know, maybe they're not allowed to actually investigate because it is officially the examiner's, like...
Not anymore. it's Wilmington PD's now because
it is now, but just the fact that there's a skeleton, so they're like, oh, it's the examiner's problem. Right. Like, is that their attitude, that it is their problem rather than we want to try to solve this? Because that's a problem on the face of it.
Right. That's a problem on the face of it. And it's an easy pawn off to them. Like, well, medical examiner's got the body. But in actuality, they don't want it. There's not been an investigation. There won't be an investigation. It was a lucky break that somebody at the medical examiner's office, after 2 weeks of having that body, talked to their forensic anthropologist. And they're like, what can we do? And he, this is pretty investigator. And they said, maybe let's check NAMIS. And that's the National Association of Missing People in the U.S. And that is the only reason Bobby's body was ever identified and not in Potter's Field or whatever they do with unidentified bodies, because they looked at NAMIS and they saw the video or the pictures of the Ring camera from when he left my house in that outfit that the detective from Elkton put on. And because the clothing matched, they contacted the detective in Elkton. That is
Wow.
And we in Delaware don't utilize that tool. We don't use it. We don't put missing people into it.
You got a lucky break with hip. Okay. And that's like that. And that's not even the medical examiner's job, right? Is to do investigations like that. They just happen to do it.
Yeah.
NAMIS is a forensic tool for medical examiners and police departments to be able to work together. Like, detectives have to put people into it for medical examiners when they find bodies to be able to utilize the evidence that the detectives are supposed to put into it. I got lucky because Maryland utilizes it, and somebody at the Delaware Medical Examiner's Office decided to check and saw the clothing match. But if they had not, if he had disappeared, well, he did disappear in Delaware, but if Delaware had chosen to investigate it, they never put him in there, they never would have tied it together, and he would have been just as gone as that building's going to be soon.
Have you requested all the files for your brother's case?
I don't think that I can, because it's an active investigation. I have really been on the detective and his boss, the sergeant, and the AG to get the data and the files from Elkton. It's been since February 16th the body was found. They still haven't made it the 25 minutes to Elkton to pick up all of the files of the case that's now closed, with all the Facebook data, all the Google data, of that stuff.
So who's the department that's handling the investigation right now? Is it Elkton?
No, Wilmington Police Department, because the body is gone.
Okay.
Elkton doing it when I just went there and they took the missing persons report because Delaware wouldn't. But he never left Delaware. It was a waste
Do you have a detective who's in charge of the case?
Yes. Detective O'Connor is in charge of the case. His boss is Sergeant Saldam. I've met with both of them. And I'm still in communication with the detectives from Elkton because they're trying to help us. They feel bad for us. So they're the one, how I know that none of the evidence has even been picked up from Elkton yet after all these months.
Okay, so is Detective O'Connor, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I do have. I'm just trying to get the phone number out there for people to call if they have any information about it. So what I have for a number is a 302-654-5151 for the Wilmington Police Department, and you'd be looking, if anyone has any information, you'd be looking for a Detective O'Connor. Anyone does have any information about any of this?
So Jen is actually a private investigator. She said, I would find out who the contractors are that worked on the site around the time your brother went missing. Then go look at the workers who were there at the time. The position his body was in looks like he was placed. His arms were not broken like he had fallen or above his arms. Or like I said, his hands would have been up. If he crawled down there.
It seems very unreasonable. Now, I assume that they're like the access point would have been from above.
Yeah, the fifth floor bathroom that they say he went in from, through the drop ceiling into a little teensy tiny like access point. Nobody can figure out exactly how, but that would be the only way to get into that pipe. Medical examiner asked the building owner if he could have gone in from the roof or from the sixth floor, and they were adamantly like, no, it has to be the fifth floor.
It can only be the fifth floor, or they say it had to be the fifth floor, not the sixth. Like, so and that's the thing, is like, what's the reality here? Is like, is it possible it was the sixth, or could it legitimately only have been the fifth? Like, or could he have gotten in from the bottom?
Well, here's the kicker.
Crawled up, right?
They can't tell us who took down the first part of the wall so that they were able to look, because they said they were able to look over the wall. Now, what you guys posted was a lot of more of the wall was removed. But before that, four different people have said they looked over the wall and could see the skull. Nobody can say who took that portion of the wall down. So the wall might have been taken down when his body was placed there and never put back up.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. Because if they'd been working on it for years or for over a period of time, and I don't know how long that was.
But you said, is there any chance that wall was put up after his body got placed in there?
Yep.
Or we don't know?
Nope. And the building's been empty since 2021.
Right. Okay. So
the other thing
who
is,
knows?
If it's a hung seal in the bathroom, so we're to believe that Bobby lifted the tile, climbed up in there, placed the tile back, and then jumped down with his arms down on the side and
ripped the drop ceiling out. And in addition to that, all the toilets in the bathroom were ripped out and they were thrown against the door. So we're to believe that while he was hiding for a trespassing charge, he destroyed the bathroom, threw the toilets in front of the door.
Shit, yeah.
There was no water damage and the water was on and the electric was on. So you're not going into those pipes of steel copper wires because he was in contracting. You're not going to do that because all the building has all of its power. And he managed to maneuver up and around and down and into the wall without anybody knowing by himself. He just chose to do it with no phone.
This is what I've said a couple times, Janera. She said, if he was crawling, wouldn't his arms be up? Yeah, absolutely.
Unless he's a snake, right? Which he's not.
He'd still have a cell phone. He'd be that snake with a cell phone, figuring out how to use it.
Jess says, looks like they built the wall around him.
And I do want to put the picture, because just because I want to see it. So again, viewer discretion, because we'll put this image back up here. Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell if it was built around him or not. It's all just
dropped in from the top. It was already probably removed.
Right.
Down, arms at his sides, you know, and then.
Well, that's the thing, is that pipe, and sure, pipes don't take a lot of, like, that. That's not an old pipe, we'll just say. Like, that pipe is not, the piping that's in there, the septic pipe, isn't from, like, 30 years ago, right?
I don't know.
So
what I do know is there was an asbestos crew that was that took out 118 linear feet of asbestos pipes from that building after Bobby went missing and before he was discovered. And how did they
know? Well, that's an important note.
Seems like they would have seen something.
Seen something.
I mean, it at the same time, it's like, how do you convince so many people to not say something unless you have a select group of people that are working in an area, right? Unless they're the ones that involved and they all are prior agreement to it.
And I don't
this
know
is
if
all
you
speculation,
know this.
My opinion.
Yes.
Don't sue us, giant, well-connected individuals in Delaware.
Is he facing the pipe at this point? Like, is that so the front of his?
He was facing, his back was to the pipe. That was, his skull was kind of not.
See, that doesn't make sense either.
No. Why would you go down with your back to the pipe?
What? Right. Why would you go?
Because it would give out.
Your face is going to be where you have the most in front of you to.
Right. Right. And if you're in theory, because I mean, this has been floated out there, maybe he was trying to steal copper pipes. And I'm like, with no flashlight and the power on in the building and the water on in the building and no tools, he's going to.
And I meant to ask that too. I assume that they checked at the bottom of to see if there was anything at the bottom of that.
No, they did not. But space. Also meshing between the pipe each floor, I believe, because the meshing was like pulled up or pushed down where he supposedly slid in. So anything that dropped off of him would be right there.
Would be okay.
And it wasn't there.
No, and they didn't check the basement either. The owner of the building told me that. They didn't check anywhere.
And he just got approved for housing.
Mm-hmm.
He was staying with you, his big sister.
Had a
There's
wonderful
no
day.
Piping at that point.
And broke up with the girl that he didn't want to be with anymore. Like, he was ready to live his life. And then he just decided to crawl into that space on April 11th.
Wow.
And not move. Just stay there with his arms at his sides and not move.
5.2 miles from my house where I tried to report him missing.
Which they said he wasn't a candidate for being a missing person.
Meet the criteria.
Although, right, didn't meet the criteria. Although that violates Delaware's state law about him.
And here's a good question too. So, you had said when he came to your house, he had a bag, right? Did he leave with a bag that day?
Yeah. So when he left my house, he left his clothing here. And this is actually, that's a great question, because I've been asked why I keep pointing out that he was wearing a t-shirt, just a t-shirt and jeans. But it was April 11th in Delaware, and it was warm that day, but it gets cold at night. It got down to 41. Mm-hmm. So him leaving in just a t-shirt, leaving all of his sweatshirts and stuff here, that's a very relevant clue, like that he was not planning to be out for very long. But he'd left with his backpack, his laptop that was in there, the charger, the cell phone that he was using, his hair gel that I just bought him randomly enough, and all of that's missing, including the jewelry.
Never found, not in the building.
No.
Has that building been torn down at this point?
It's pretty much stripped, because you know I drive by it all the time. But it's stripped, and it's still standing, though. I don't know exactly when the demo is supposed to happen, but it's going to happen.
I hope that even with it stripped, they did a very thorough search of everything. But from the sounds of it, it was unidentified just at the beginning, right? Like, they just thought it was someone that had been for years, didn't expect foul play, so they probably just assumed we don't have to actually investigate anything. And they could have just left it.
They took the body out of the wall while the demo was still happening. They did not try and protect any of the evidence whatsoever from the beginning, per the medical examiner, per the Wilmington PD, per the contractors.
It's not so disgusting.
Evidence. Yeah. And it was a person. That was a person that disappeared less than a year before that. And it's a human being.
Stacy talks about the tile. Is it, I can't tell, is the tile on that wall too?
Yeah, there's tile on the left, and it looks like the stuff that's on the right looks like from years before, like where the tile meets. I assume that's what she's talking about.
So it's not a shower. It's just a bathroom. So the bottom floors didn't have that tile. The bathrooms were supposedly exactly like, but that was the only floor that had that tiling, that thick tiling in it. The rest of the bathroom floors had drywall all the way down.
Weird.
Only the fifth floor had that super thick wall and the tiling. And we think that the drywall was maybe placed over the tiling, but yeah.
Sarah There's says the workers have all his things.
I don't know if it's the workers. Somebody that was in that building with him on April 11th without an alarm going off and without a police report and without the, you know, anybody calling anybody. I think that person probably has his stuff, or at 9 or 6 p.m. it ended up destroyed because that's the last message that went through on Facebook.
Jess made a comment here that's good. Even if the person couldn't use his voucher, he may have been on the list also waiting for one. And maybe, without a doubt, or either way, and this is something that maybe could be addressed for the future, is any of those sort of vouchers. You said that you think that it's possible that someone else could use it, like an identification. And I understand that people who don't have a home, people who are homeless, maybe not all of them have IDs, but maybe get them IDs if they're in that system to prevent any sort of misuse of stuff like that. I mean, it's just handy in general to always have an ID.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of stuff like that where someone could be robbed and use your, like, there's a lot of programs for people in this situation, right? And if they give out vouchers or tickets or something like that, make sure that an identification is used for it so that the wrong person isn't using it.
Right. I mean, the level of like fraud you could have happen in these situations is you don't even want to go down that rabbit hole.
Oh, right.
But there's so many things that could have happened. But I don't necessarily think what happened to him that day had anything to do with that.
With the voucher. No, right. Right.
No, I don't.
But it still could be a lead, right? If there is some sort of a process for it, right?
100%. And that system needs reform too. So like, that's what I'm trying to use my voice for. Yes, Bobby's story, but like, there's just so much change that has to happen. And unfortunately, Bobby's a victim of it.
So is there any... I think you're about to ask the same question.
Is there any pages or any... I know there's a hashtag for Bobby that you want to mention while you're on here?
So you can always go to my Facebook, which is just Kelly Canning. And then my TikTok is, what's my TikTok? KL Canning? Is it Kelly KL Canning Steel or just KL Canning?
How is that spelled?
So Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, and Steel, S-T-E-L-E. Canning is C-A-N-N-I-N-G. And you can always reference the hashtag Bobby Steel Mattered. That's what we're using. I learned all these things. People on TikTok are like, "Why don't you just use the hashtag?"
So, and I'm like, are you okay with your Facebook being posted in here for people to go to check you out? Okay, so I'll share that in the chat. This is
yeah, I should say she does have Bobby Steele Mattered as her underneath her name here as her description.
Yes.
It's K L Steele Canning. K underscore L underscore Steele underscore Canning, all in lowercase.
And you said you had a TikTok as well. I was trying to copy the other one.
That is it. The K underscore L underscore Steele underscore Canning, all in lowercase. Sorry. I wasn't prepared for that question.
No, sorry. We normally ask this at the beginning so we can have it all ready. And
yeah, usually we try to get that ready prior.
K underscore so, L underscore Steele, right?
Yep. S-T-E-E-L-E.
Yeah.
Underscore Canning.
There we go. I got it on TikTok.
So before we leave, what's something you want everyone to know, and what can people do to help you?
I want people to know that Bobby was regardless of anything, he was a great human being, and his life did matter, and the circumstances of his disappearance, the lack of concern and care, it impacts not just Bobby, so many people. And we were a heartbroken family searching for months on end, day in and day out, without the help of anyone other than groups like yours that will help. So just be compassionate, people. Like, help somebody. Look, if you see a missing person posted, like, look at the people you drive past in the street, because you don't ever know. Like, you might see that person, you might know something more than you actually think that you know. And also advocate if you can. Like, we elect the officials that make these laws in states. And I am not a political person, but we are the ones that do that. And so you do have a voice. Use it. And always reach out to the families if people are asking for help, if you're not comfortable with the police, because we can report things to the police in a way that it's not you putting yourself at risk. And everybody always knows something when someone disappears or dies. And like, these things go unsolved forever because they don't feel safe enough to come forward, or they just don't want to come forward. And that means people get away with murder. And
literally.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
So I did want to share one more time. The police department number for Wilmington, Delaware is 302-654-5151. And it was Detective O'Brien, correct?
O'Connor.
Something O. So O'Connor. So yeah, if you guys have any information, reach out. Absolutely. Well, I think that's probably about it for us tonight. We just want to say thank you very much, Kelly, for being here with us. And you mentioned earlier on that you're kind of being a thorn in their side, the department, and you have to. And you know, you're sometimes in situations like this, you're not going to get answers unless you're a pain in the ass. And it sounds like you are being a pain in their ass, which is good to see. And anyone else that lives in the area,
sadly,
make sure to reach out to them too. It's a struggle for the families to have to go through this. So anyone else that lives in the area, reach out to them as well. Reach out to them and ask them if they're getting any answers, and try to light a fire under their ass and help.
Corinne, this took place in Delaware.
Newcastle County. Well, I live in Claymont, Delaware, so that's where he disappeared from, but it's all within Newcastle County.
Right.
Don't get me started on geography again. I screwed that up from the get-go.
So any sort of sharing with this, let people know. If anyone that lives in the Delaware area, share this out to them, or just share it out in general. It really helps get the stories of the like this out there and tries to help the family. So
yeah.
For me, that's all I want to say. Thank you, everyone. And oh, Travis, that's something.
You don't have a Facebook group dedicated to Bobby Steele, right?
No. I know. Maybe I should have, but I just went through my own and I made it public. And so just everything that has from the start has gone through mine. So I figured if you make a separate one, then he already had like five. So just trying to get things posted on all of his Facebooks is hard enough. I just
made
mine as well. When this is all said and done, I'll create a new one so I can leave this all back there. But I just, it was all along. So it just made more sense to keep it under my name.
And hopefully you get some answers. And quick question someone had was, what is the girlfriend or his ex-girlfriend, the one he broke up with at the time, what is she saying about all this? Is she concerned? Has she reached out to you to express condolences or anything like that?
She was actually listed as a person of interest in the case from the Elkton Police Department, and they brought her in and questioned her. They've since said she didn't have anything to do with it. And I've met with her and spoken with her. And at this point, I don't think that they were great for each other, but I don't think she had the level of skill required to put him into that wall or even come to Wilmington to lure him into it. So I don't know what their lifestyle together created that might have brought this on, but I definitely don't think that she is the person responsible, and the police don't either right now. So.
Okay, good. Thank you for answering that. All right, Kelly, it's very nice to talk to you, and hopefully you get justice for your brother very soon.
Thank you, guys.
Right. Yeah, thank you. All right, guys, we're gonna play our outro video and we're gonna be out of here. But thank you guys, everyone, very much for tuning in, and we appreciate the shares for this to help get the story of Bobby out there. So thanks all for tuning in. You have a great night.
All right, thank you.
5-year-old Taylor Williams led investigators to Alabama this week.
So we have some breaking news from Florida. An arrest has been made.
Tonight, after years of agony, a glimmer of hope for the family.
Investigators spent hours searching through this house off Pennsylvania Avenue.
What could be a major development in the search for missing Alabama teenager?
Tonight, a stunning twist in the search for Taylor.
Somebody out there knows something.
They want to lay him to rest their way, not by somebody else's way.